Now, it's the 6 with the Jason and John Show.
Massive news to report. And it's not good. It is not good for the University of Memphis. But Mike Miller, assistant coach for the University of Memphis, informed Penny Hardaway earlier this morning that he is stepping down effective immediately from his position at the University of Memphis as assistant coach to spend more time with family. That is the plan right now, is to, you know, take a step back. You know, Mason, his son, is going to be a senior in high school. Maverick is I believe a freshman in high school now, and obviously his young daughter Jalen. The plan is to be, you know, a little bit more present with them. But yeah, the news right now that we're all sort of digesting is that Mike Miller no longer on staff at the University of Memphis. And you know, from Mike's perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, you want to be a father, you want to be around your, you know, it's not like Mike has to do this for money. You know, this was a passion project of sorts.
Yeah, same as for Penny. Passion project. You're not doing it for money, to your point.
Yeah.
So you got to be happy, right? And if it's, if happiness, if it's pulling you away from your family, I get that. I'll ask you, you had the news first, because I've received it, you've probably received it, maybe you can give us the best answer. People have speculated maybe there might be an opening with the Pistons. I know, you know, with the Detroit Pistons, is that something?
Yeah, no, this is not okay. To pursue a job with the Pistons. I don't expect that. In fact, I can really...
That seems pretty official.
I can tell you it's not...
I was getting that as recently as yesterday, people asking me. Yeah, no, I'd assume not too, because, yeah. I mean, the GM spot's still open, right? And you just wonder, well, where's the experience level? Although we've had Windhorst on, who said Mike could go into any front office and get a job right now. But the GM, you figure, especially for Detroit, you're going to want somebody experienced, or at least who's proven it first. Now, you know, a role like Tayshaun Prince has been in with the Grizzlies, I could see that, but I'm glad... You know, with this announcement that it's family related, I wondered if that sort of put that to bed, and it sounds like, at least through you, that it has.
Yeah, no, this is not
it's
to
not
take
another
a job,
opportunity.
And I don't know if that would be like, would that make you feel better? I don't know.
Oh,
like,
I'm not looking to feel better. Yeah. But you know, that had been talked about, and we like to bring what folks are talking about right to the front, hit it dead on. Was just wanted to bring that up, but you make it sound pretty official. It's not an opportunity. It's more the family. There's no way around it. It's a huge blow.
Yeah.
Because think about trying to, when you think about replacing Mike and what he brings to the table for Penny, we talked about when Penny had the opportunity to hire him, why this one was so unique. He not only has the NBA connections, right? I mean, because Cody Toppert's got some of those as one of the, you know, best former, you know, in terms of assistant coaches, Phoenix, but trainer, got that guy. He had, you know, he's highly thought of, all that. But it's not just Mike that had those NBA ties. I mean, he's one of the best shooters ever come through the NBA.
Yep.
It was the ties with the elite level prospects.
Yep.
So it was the two of them together that, when you wrap it all up, let's face it, made him very valuable for the program. And replacing that, because remember what we were talking before Mike really came up. You know, Penny, we're talking about whether or not he can get Larry Brown in there, whether that'll even be, you know, accepted by the administration. Tom Bowen at the time, who let's face it, put his foot down on that. But Penny was interested in that. Mike represented something else.
Yep.
You know, and so I'm not sure you can duplicate what he brings. So do you go another direction? Do you stay, hey, NBA ties, a former head coach type? Do you try to emulate and get again what you had in Mike? Because, again, I tell you, I'm not sure how many of those that are out there that have got the ties, as respected as he is in when it comes to the NBA level, and then got the ties to the kids. Like, Mike helped you. You know, you're close on Jalen Green. You got Boogie Ellis. You got Lester Quinones, Precious Achiuwa. All those guys he helped you get, was instrumental in you getting. And so who's that guy? You know, who's that guy that's got those ties to those elite-level players and – you know, that respect level and everything that he brings with being an NBA guy, that is a tough one. And again, I'm already getting it. It's a question. Will players look to transfer? Would a Boogie or Lester Quinones look, who were obviously, you know, Mike was a big part of their recruitment, or do you feel like they're pretty set? Have they known this? You know, or is this something Mike just slept on? And now, you know, everybody finds out today, and we'll get the sort of ripple effects. Those are questions that will obviously have to be answered. What's your gut tell you?
I mean,
on that question. Transfers?
Well, no.
Okay. That's big. Another big one there.
Okay, so there's a lot of I'm obviously my phone is blowing up. So I'm trying to like juggle all this stuff.
I'm trying to talk for the most of it and then throw you the important questions
No, that's a good teamwork. Yeah. That's what we do. We're like Stockton and Malone, you know.
Man, because this is a big scoop.
Listen,
big news, certainly.
Let's read the Mike Miller statement on Instagram.
By all means.
Let's read that because I think it's important. The past 2 years have been amazing, and I have so many people to thank. Coach Hardaway for believing in me, all our players for their commitment, the University of Memphis and its incredible fans, my wonderful wife and kids, and the entire city of Memphis for everything you have done for me and my family. All of you have made this opportunity possible for me, and I'm truly grateful. As much as I've loved this job, I had a blast being part of the special program Coach is building. The past few months have made me realize that it's time for me to spend more time focused on family and wherever the journey will take me next. I will find a way to stay in basketball and continue to make an impact on this city that I love so much. I will always be a Tiger, GTG. So that is the official statement from Mike. And I think, by the way, that's what this is. Like, there's no nefarious, like, oh, he's... You know, he's going to another school, or there's.
Well,
it does not mean that he is getting away from anything that's coming for Memphis, okay? Like, this is not a situation where Mike Miller leaving means there's some big hammer coming on the University of Memphis.
Well, it's a hammer that some have speculated is coming down, guys like Pat Forty.
Well, I'm just saying this decision is totally unrelated to that.
Got you.
This is a decision that is totally unrelated to anything that the NCAA will or won't decide, okay? So let's talk about that. That's the first thing.
Okay.
Second thing is, you asked about transfers. Obviously, everybody knows that Mike is responsible for Boogie and
Lester.
Lester, Precious, who obviously is going to the NBA draft. Do I expect those guys to transfer? I do not. I expect those guys to stay. And I think, listen, it's very simple. If you're Boogie Ellis or Lester Quinones, why in the world would you leave? Yes, the coach that you got a relationship with and your recruiting process is now gone, but those dudes have 30 minutes a game guaranteed next year. You know, you're not getting a waiver. So just know that if you leave, you're going to sit out. If I were them and I really wanted to think about leaving, I would speed up sort of my graduation process, you know, take as many classes and courses as I can, and then think about a graduate transfer route down the road. But it wouldn't make any sense, nor do I expect them to transfer in the wake of this news. Now, that's immediate. It's June 3rd. I've had conversations. If I know Mike, like I know Mike, he will talk some sense to them, if that makes sense. Mike wants what's best for Penny too. You know, Mike wants to do the best thing for Penny in that program
as
well.
That's important to me. I think it's important for our listeners to expound on that point. I'm reading his words about the family, and you have to feel like, okay, like to John's point, he's not going to another school, right? And maybe if you talked about a situation where you're as pivotal in the recruitment as Mike was in theirs, you go into another school, the chances of transferring with that coach, they go up, obviously. Mike says in this post, you know, the past few months have made me realize that it's time for me to spend more time focused on family. Now, he does mention it, wherever the journey will take me next. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder about...
I'm just telling you, it's not...
You're telling me it's not the pit? Okay. That doesn't take away from my point here.
Yeah.
I'm imagining, again, with how close he is with those players, to the point that you just said, you're trying to do right by that program and those players too.
Absolutely.
And if you're not going to another school, right, and it's right now, it's to be with family, then you're probably telling those players, stay where you are. It just seems like the natural thing. Certainly, we would all say the right thing.
Yep.
But again, if this was Mike going to another college job, maybe so. Maybe those kids are transferring with him. But the fact that he's stepping down, in this case for family, makes you think, well, Mike, those guys probably already know the deal because I'm going to tell you this. As close as he was to those guys, and clearly you see it, I imagine they've probably had an inkling of this or they've known for a while. And so the fact that you don't already see him, right, in a transfer portal or whatever, heck, we just had Lester Quinones down protesting downtown, didn't we? You were talking about that yesterday. You can see the pictures on his Instagram account. Makes me I have to believe there's been a conversation of those guys that, man, y'all got to stay here. And why wouldn't you? You're playing for the coach that, you know, Penny Hardaway, another guy with NBA ties, can still same thing. Get you where you want to go. Have you prepared? I mean, you're one of the best from what we saw last year. You had one of the best defensive teams in the country. So you know he can coach. But I just got to imagine Mike has told them, right, that, look, man, y'all's best option going to be to stay here, that he's trying to do right by the program. Mike got to live here.
Yep.
You know, Mike still lives here.
Yep.
He's got businesses here.
Yep.
That's the other part of this. You start burning stuff up or not burning it up, but an idea that, okay, guys are transferring out. People are going to, you know, you're still living here. And so all that said, I got to believe that he's probably told those – please stay and do right by the program that you committed
absolutely.
To. Absolutely. And again, if he's here and he's spending time just away from – well, then he's really not gone. And so those guys can get – you know, he can be in those guys' ear from the house or wherever else, but he's still around to that point. So
yeah.
My hope is, yes, that there would be no transfers. I got to imagine if there were we'd seen some sign of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think
– now, what if they go and add a couple players?
Well, I mean, obviously –
Penny Hardaway's recruited.
Yeah, if you start talking about instant, you know –
as you said, 30 minutes a game for both of them. Where you go get a Nimhard who's in, you know, I don't know that he'd be immediately eligible.
Right. I mean, everybody you're talking about, you know, Figueroa is a guy who it sounds like
would be.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Could they get him? I don't know. But yeah, if you start adding players who can play immediately, then we can reevaluate that. But let's just take this statement. Will Lester Quinones and Boogie Ellis transfer as a result of Mike Miller leaving? The answer is no. That doesn't mean they won't transfer for anything. But I can just tell you, like, you're not. I would be shocked if I see anything related to their transfer in the coming days, and you know, without any kind of addition to the roster, they got it pretty good. And again, Mike is going to be an advocate of Penny, and he knows how badly Memphis needs those two. You know, so you know, this is a situation where,
man, who do you go get?
It is the risk you run when you have an all-star staff, you know, an NBA staff that does not need the money in college basketball, right? And I would say this too. I mean, I think, first of all, it's 100% accurate that this is a decision to spend more time with family. So all these people who, you know, are tweeting me saying that this is not what it's about.
You're going to the Grizzlies.
You're just wrong. No,
he's
not going to the Grizzlies.
Tayshaun's going to Detroit and Mike's going to the Grizzlies.
That's not happening.
I'm glad you're shooting all this down. If he's staying in town, how come he couldn't go take Tayshaun's old spot?
He could. I mean,
if Tayshaun indeed gets hired,
here's what we know about Mike. He's not just going to sit around and do nothing.
Well, okay? That's like, the other part of the line.
He is going to get involved somehow.
Wherever the journey will take me next.
Right. Where could it take him? Who knows? Do I think it's going to take him into college basketball? Hell no.
Well, that's the again. We're talking about transfers.
You know, if I had to say, this is me speaking, but if I had to say,
man.
You know, Mike got into this not to be an assistant coach. Mike got into this to be a head coach. Mike got into this to build relationships with players and to get them to the program that he was leading, not where he was an assistant. And when you sort of juxtapose, okay, well, that hasn't happened for me. I haven't gotten that head coaching job. I haven't had, you know, whether it's because – could he have gotten one this offseason?
Yeah, one
probably.
Of these. Yeah, I'm sure.
But the pandemic hit, and you know, the movement wasn't out there like it might have otherwise been. And so then you have to sit around and say, okay, well, I've got my family here. They're going in, you know, the most important years of their high school careers. And you weigh that against being an assistant for a third year. You know, the G League is now a pain in your ass. You know, it's just the dynamics. I kept talking to you guys about the dynamics at Memphis changing, and I hate to say it, but this was one of them. This was one of them. And, you know, for Memphis, as they sort of move forward, you know, this is something for Memphis that really is quite the blow. Not just because we know what sort of Mike did, right? He was great with the kids. He was great with the – but it hurts the story that you're telling, right? Penny Hardaway has told this NBA story. We have Sam Mitchell. We have Mike Miller. We have all these guys on our staff, you know, and me – and now they don't have either one of those guys. And so you almost have to change your narrative now. And they were probably going to have to do that anyway because of the G League. But you have to find something else. And Penny will, and I suspect that, you know, he'll find a new way to cut through. But, I mean, there's just no way to say it. It's a bad development for the University of Memphis basketball program today.
Man, Penny got a job in terms of what you're looking for, because again, remember, at one point he was thinking of a former head coach of the NBA and Larry Brown. You were looking at that now, and he had that type in a way in Sam Mitchell, you know, who was a former coach of the year in the NBA. That only worked for a year. So now do you with this spot, you still got Tony Madlock, you still got Cody Toppert. Do you look again for that guy? Do you try to emulate Mike? Because you run the risk of coming up short, too. Right? That's the other part of it, is that you need – what's more important rather than looking like or having ties that it seem like Mike's are the ability to get those things done.
Yep.
And so effectiveness becomes really what you need. And so maybe it's not. And we talked about how unique Mike was. Maybe you can't. Maybe there's no way to do that. We shall see. What I know is that Penny, you know, now going into his third year, is going to – you talk about lessons that you're learning as a college head coach and what comes with this stuff. Well, one of the things that comes with it, and they, you know, you don't talk about it at the beginning when you're taking the job, is assistants moving on and leaving. But the idea, too, that you could – I mean, let's keep in mind how instrumental Mike was in that entire class, in the number one class in the country. That spring, you know, Precious, Boogie, Lester, you know, the idea now is that, well, now, Penny, it's back to you. What my point, as a college coach, you can't become too dependent on one of your assistants, because that assistant, the good ones, they move on and become head coaches. In this case, Mike stepping down for family, that's not what's happening, but the point is still the same. You can't become so dependent on those assistant coaches, right, that once they're gone, you lose, you skip a step, you miss a step. It's not the same. So that's the, in terms of lessons for Penny, right, it's going to be that. It's going to be, man, how do I not miss a beat, right, and keep this thing going at the level we've had it at without a Mike Miller.
Yep.
Now, there's got to be candidates out there that can be effective for Penny Hardaway. There's no question about it. But just let's go back to the lesson, like we're talking about with Penny. A lot of stuff comes with being a college coach. It ain't just going out there and coaches X and O's and developing kids. It's, man, I'm going to have to be on this. You know, I got to do it, particularly if you're not going to bring in an assistant that was as effective in recruiting as Mike is. So that's, you know, man, it can shake you up potentially. But one thing we've known about Penny is that, you know, whether it's recruiting or whether it's the hires he's made so far, been pretty shrewd all the way around. So I got to think he's got a plan, you know, or at least, you know, you've been – because if those players if I'm saying those players probably had an inkling of this because of how close they are, I got to bet that Penny's probably had an inkling too. Like, you're not just being blindsided by this, that you were probably operating, you know, under the assumption already that he wouldn't come. Because, John, I'll be real honest with you. This is just me. This is me speculating. This is me watching Mike Miller last year on the sidelines. I think I even said it on there. It didn't look like he was having as much fun as the last season. Maybe he's thinking more about family as that's going on. And maybe I'm way off base. Maybe he had all the fun in the world. But it didn't seem like the same Mike in year two. It seemed like a Mike that had a lot of other stuff going on. You've mentioned his sons are prospects, and they're playing.
Yep.
They've got their own games. But you could just sort of see it visually. Now, again, that doesn't amount to it doesn't necessarily amount to anything, but, you know, to my point about Penny,
right,
I gotta think he suspected this for a while, that he might lose Mike, and you've probably been planning for this.
Well,
so he's probably ahead of just, hey, I got blindsided with today, let me start looking at candidates. He's probably already looking.
I will just say this: he was not surprised.
Okay, well, that jives with what I'm saying.
He was not surprised. And, you know, in time,
because it's how involved have you been in the last
time,
part?
You know, maybe we can talk about it. But today it's about Mike and his decision to step down and sort of how that affects the University of Memphis.
Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And every Wednesday at this time, we talk to Mark Giannotto. He's a sports columnist over at the Commercial Appeal. Hear him every afternoon on Giannotto and Jeffrey. He joins us. Now, Mark, finally, the NBA decided that they were going to roll out a plan. They made a decision. What do you think?
The first thing that came to my mind was they're not out to get the Grizzlies. This seems – I was really, really fearful that the Grizzlies were going to get screwed in all of this, because they were the one team in all of this that seemed to have the most to lose, because, you know, their lead for that eighth seed was not viewed as safe as, say, Orlando's was, and then the rest of the seeding in the NBA playoffs was pretty much – for the most part, you know, there would have been some jockeying for position, but every other team that was in the playoff hunt, for the most part, knew it was going to be in the playoffs. And so hearing this and, you know, hearing these reports today and going through it, it feels like the NBA did not screw the Grizzlies here. It still feels like it favors, you know, Portland and New Orleans and Zion and Damian Lillard in that it, you know, they don't actually have to be in the eighth spot to get a playoff berth. you know, they just have to be within four games. But it seems like, given all the complicated factors the NBA had to account for, this seems as fair, I guess, as it can be when you have to, when you account for the fact that the NBA needs to make money and they needed to feel like they needed these other teams to feel like they had a legitimate shot at making the playoffs if they're coming to Disney World. So all in all, I think it sounds like a pretty good plan. It seems like it actually gives the Grizzlies an advantage for the fact that they were the 8th seed and up by 3.5 games through 65 games.
They can also continue to preach safety, right, too, Mark, and not bringing everyone back. I know there was, I guess, some middle ground there that they've sort of hit, and that you're not bringing everybody back, so you're not just throwing, you know, they could be accused of throwing caution to the wind. It's all for money to bring everybody back. You've still got that part that you could preach. At least it's not everybody, right? You could still 22 teams
it's
is easier to
plan,
right.
But there was not going to be a perfect plan, you know. Like, there was no way the perfect plan was for COVID-19 to not exist and the season play out how it usually does. So, like I said, there are a lot of you're right. The safety factor, the fact that the league is losing, you know, money hand over fist this year, the fact that you want to create a compelling product, even though it's obviously there's going to be no fans and it's going to be essentially, you know, all the games are going to be in Orlando. It seems like this plan accounts for lot of the concerns people had. There's still going to be issues, like, you know, we still don't know how the scheduling is going to work.
Right.
I'm curious what that will mean for the Grizzlies. I was just looking, you know, the Grizzlies, as we all know, as the fans of other teams like to point out, the Grizzlies had the toughest remaining schedule of all these teams going for the 8th seed. So what does that mean for their schedule in these 8 games? Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, you look at the Grizzlies' normal schedule, like the schedule they were supposed to play down the stretch. They have 5 games left. They had 5 games left against Portland, 2 against Portland, 2 against New Orleans, and 1 against San Antonio. Does that mean they play those 5 games plus another 3 that the NBA kind of randomly chooses? Will it be a random assemblage of games? That part will be interesting for me to see how the NBA does the scheduling.
Yeah.
And do they stick to the fact that, you know, technically the Grizzlies, you know, will they will they try to make sure the Grizzlies have the toughest schedule
right.
of all these teams, whereas New Orleans doesn't? Like, how do they do that? That'll be an interesting detail to see ironed out. I imagine that will wait. You know, I bet we won't hear that tomorrow.
Yeah.
When the vote goes through, because that's not as pressing as just letting these teams know exactly what the overall plan is. But like I said, I'm encouraged by it. Like, it's not completely fair to the Grizzlies, but it felt like no plan was going to be completely fair to everyone.
Right.
And this one seems to be a happy medium, or at least a relative. It seems to give the Grizzlies some credit for what they did through 65 games.
It's been a while, obviously, since we have seen NBA action, but when you just sort of think about, you know, how do you sort of see how do the Grizzlies plan on guarding Tim Duncan? Like, who will they match up with Tim Duncan and Tony Parker with the Spurs? I mean, I know it's been a while since we've seen NBA action, but like, how do you sort of see that game plan playing out?
Tim Duncan and Tony Parker. Well, Tim Duncan's an assistant, so how their assistants are going to match.
I had no idea. It's been that long, huh? Wow. Tim Duncan's not playing anymore? Wow.
Well, honestly, the biggest question for me, if you're talking about on court with the Grizzlies, one, is everyone healthy? I assume Jaren's healthy.
Right.
I assume at this point Brandon Clark's healthy. We know Justice Winslow is healthy again, and he's the big question for me. Because you're essentially going to have these 8 regular season games and hopefully the playoffs. I mean, this is a guy who's never played with any of these players.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the rest of the roster play the whole season together. But and so do you work? How do you work him into the rotation? Because in theory, if the chemistry is there, if his game is there, he's a valuable guy to have. That's why you traded for him. And he could potentially be a huge boost to this roster, but it's complicated because you only have 8 games to kind of work him in. And from this format, those 8 games are going to be, you know, for the Grizzlies, for all intents and purposes, they've got 8 playoff games before the playoffs, essentially, because of how this is set up. And so that to me is the biggest question for the Grizzlies. How do you work in Justice Winslow? What's his role, and how effective will he be after being out for so long and also not having ever played with most of these players?
More likely, Mark, the Grizzlies build their lead to 4.5 or slide to 9.
I got to see. To me,
You know the 22 teams.
I'm going to say more likely they end up in some sort of 8-9 game. That's what I would say. I don't know if they'll lose. I don't know if they'll lose their grip on the 8 seed officially. Like, if I had to guess, they'll be the 8 seed, and some team will be within like 2.5 games of them. That would be my guess.
Well, who
something
do you,
like that.
Which of those teams do you give the nod? Is it New Orleans? And again, not knowing how that 8's going to look on regular season, but you know, to your point about health, well, Portland, we think, is getting Nurkic and Collins back. They should be healthy, not to mention that they're vets and they've been here, done that. New Orleans, you've lost to twice, and now they've got Zion. Like, which team you more, I guess, concerned about,
well,
scared of,
I
if you're the Grizzlies?
The team people aren't mentioning is the team that was playing the best when the league stopped was Sacramento. I would say, you know, typically in these sorts of situations where you're talking about it just 8 games, who's the best player? And right now, like, Zion's great and Drew Holiday's great. But right now, out of all those teams, who's the best player? It's Damian Lillard.
It's Dame, for sure.
So if he's healthy, I would say Portland is probably the biggest threat. But I would say, I frankly think Sacramento is a bigger threat than New Orleans. Like, New Orleans, even though
the Pelicans, dusted your ass.
What?
I mean, the Pelicans did dust your ass. You know, I mean,
that's not true. But one of those games was when Jaren wasn't
right,
playing.
Right.
You know, that's fine. And you're right. And again, I think a lot of it relates to the schedule. Like, the Pelicans technically had 2 games left against Memphis in the regular schedule, and so did Portland. Is the NBA going to make it so that Memphis plays, you know, essentially 4 games against those two?
We think they will, don't you?
They have to. It's fair.
If you're trying to be fair to those teams,
yes.
I think, to me, if I had to guess, 5 of their 8 games are going to be 2 against Portland, 2 against New Orleans, and 1 against San Antonio, because that was what was left on their regular schedule. And then what the other 3 games are, we'll see.
Yeah.
I got to go back. Was Sacramento really that hot? It's been a while, like John said. I mean, he thought Tim Duncan still.
Doug Christie caught some fire for the Kings.
Can you put that back together, that hot streak for that young team? Can they, pick up where they left off? I guess that'd be the.
Yeah, that's the big question.
Yeah.
That's another big question.
But you're right, Dark Horse.
It's essentially a whole other season.
Sure.
I mean, like, let's be real. And so to really know who's going to come out and look good, it could be someone, who knows? Phoenix could come out and look fantastic.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, Steve Nash, been ready.
Nash.
It's such a long time since the last game. I think to truly know who's going to look good, I mean, you know, I think everyone's going to be guessing. You know, it's especially for those teams competing for the 8th spot, whereas, like, you know, the Lakers and the Clippers and the Bucks, like, those teams are going to be using these 8 games just to ramp up, whereas these 8 seed teams are going to have to hit the ground running. Like the Grizzlies, all these teams are going to have to. These are literally 8 playoff games. That's what it feels like to me when you hear this plan.
Can you recreate home court advantage for the teams that, you know, this has been thrown about a little bit? How do you do that when you're all in Orlando? Do you give them the ball? You know, after the traditional tip, does the home court team get, you know, the ball to start the second, third, and fourth quarters? Are you into any of this, and is there a way to sort of recreate that? Do you believe that they will find some way?
I guess. I mean, you could give, like, a coach's challenge, an extra coach's challenge, maybe. Like, I think to disrupt the core of what basketball –
Right, like a 7th foul.
Yeah,
that seems silly.
Like, that doesn't seem right. Like, let's just be real. You are not – this
restart is unprecedented with the circumstances, and there's just no way for it to be, you know, to completely mimic what would have happened during a normal season. I don't think you want to change the rules of basketball. Just like I did, you know, where, just like with that World Cup style format that people were discussing. It sounds great and it would have been cool, but at the same time, like, it's so different from what the league's rules and what its typical playoff situation is like, that I don't understand why you would do it unless you're instituting it for the long term. And that's what I would say about changing, you know, whether it's giving someone an extra foul or, you know, maybe you give someone the ball. I could see that there was a scenario laid out in that story where, you know, the second, third, and fourth quarter, the higher seeded team gets to start with the ball. That seems okay to me. But to fundamentally change, like, the core principles of basketball, and
right,
to me,
I'm
like,
with you,
giving someone an extra foul, for instance, doesn't. I don't agree with doing that. And maybe the league will, but to me, you want to keep the core principles of basketball as close to what they usually are as possible. And so I think it's just, it's unfortunate, just like this whole situation is unfortunate, where
right,
you're having to go to Orlando, you're having to play in front of no fans, you know, the season had to be stopped. You can't account for everything, because this is just such a unique situation. And so, I don't know what to say other than, you know, tough. It's tough. It's tough for those higher seeded teams that they're not going to be allowed to play in front of their home fans. But I would not try and tamper essentially with the actual basketball being played on the court.
I would agree.
Just because, you know, like I said, this is not a perfect situation and it's not going to be a perfect solution. All you can do is the best you can.
Yeah, and honestly, like, there was some talk a couple of weeks ago about how there might be an asterisk on the championship this year. I mean, there's no reason to believe that, right? I mean, the format is basically going to be the same. I mean, I don't think there's any asterisk at all. It's just weird how we got here. I guess we had to cut the regular season off, but, I mean, you still have to go win the games. You still have to go win the series.
Lakers and Clippers still going to be
favorites. It'll always be remembered as the pandemic season.
It will.
Like, it's not, you know, like, there might not be an asterisk, but, like, no one's going to look back on the 2019-20 season. And, like, people are going to look back and go, oh, that was when the pandemic stopped the league for 3 months and they had to play in Orlando. So it's always going to be remembered differently. Whether it's an asterisk or not, honestly, I think it probably, like, the question is what happens when these teams return to play? Because I think there will be a tendency for people to put an asterisk on it if crazy things happen that you weren't expecting to happen, like an 8 seed goes to the finals or something like that. Not, you know, to me, that, you know, because, again, this is essentially a separate season.
Yeah.
We're so excited about the return to play. Like, if some big time player gets COVID-19 while down there and can't play, like, that will change how people think about this. Like, whether it's LeBron or Giannis or, you know, Kawhi or someone like that, you know, some James Harden, someone like that gets COVID-19. I think that will change how people think about this.
Well, so, I mean, but did it change the way that we look at the Toronto Raptors last season? Because Kevin Durant,
you're right. I mean,
Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, you know, they both left the series with injuries. We don't say Toronto didn't win a championship and didn't earn it.
That's true, but I don't think there's going to necessarily be an asterisk, but I just think I do think there are some factors here that people are going to remember this season differently.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because, I mean, inevitably, I mean, you played, you know, however many games you played, you know, 70 games or 65 games, whatever it ends up being, you know.
But that's also why I think it was important not to do this World Cup style thing, because that's the type of thing that might create an asterisk, because it was so different than what the normal circumstances are for the NBA.
Yeah.
And this plan that seems to be, that's being reported today, seems to be a nice compromise in that the league can make some more money with these regular season games and play-in games, but it also adheres to the structure that the NBA would do in a normal season.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, man, we appreciate the time as always. Good stuff.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, no problem, guys.
All right, yep. You know, you got me thinking, man, like the NBA's kind of been in a coma, and we were kind of like joking about like Tim Duncan coming out, you know.
Sean Marion playing for Phoenix.
Yeah, like I kind of want to hear, like, okay, like, let's just say you've been in a coma, like, I don't know, for 17 years, okay? You've been in a coma for a long time, and
well,
you come out.
That's long.
You come out in 2020, and they tell you, hey, the NBA playoffs about to start, all right? And the Lakers are the one seed. You're definitely saying, oh, Kobe and Shaq, right? Like, you're definitely saying Kobe and Shaq are about to, you know, run through the league. What about the Clippers, though?
You talking about some Rip Van Winkle. You just felt you stayed out for a while.
Well, if the Clippers, who are
was
you?
Was it 20 years he was down? So, yeah, you're talking about Rip.
17, yeah.
You're talking about Rip.
Who are you thinking
you
of?
You know how long Rip was down? You know the Rip story like that?
Rip Van Winkle?
It was 17?
No, I don't know if it was. No, you made the Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah, I thought it was just 20 years. You said 17.
Well,
like, you know the story
year.
Well.
I just picked a year, 2003. Okay. Okay, 2003, Clippers. Who are you thinking of on the roster? Baron Davis? Is Baron Davis on the roster?
I think of him as a Warrior back that far, but he probably was a Clipper at that point.
All
because
right.
Baron was a Warrior.
What about the Nuggets?
The Nuggets in 03?
Yeah.
Oh, bro, I'm not good at putting these. Iverson. Carmelo.
Yeah, I think Melo was there.
Melo
right?
was the one that was there.
He might have been a rookie in 03, right?
Yeah.
That's about – maybe he either was a rookie or he wasn't there yet. It's close. 03 is one of those – close
man, you're taking me back.
Baron Davis was not a Clipper until 08.
And I'm in my 20s at that point, which is a decade
actually,
I've forgotten.
03, Baron Davis would have been a Hornet, a New Orleans Hornet. All right, what about – there is no – was there an Oklahoma City in 2003?
No, no way.
It was still New Orleans,
yeah.
Right?
What?
Yeah. What about the Rockets? Yao Ming and T-Mac. This is great. Yeah, this is fun. Dallas, you'd have Dirk, of course. The Grizzlies, you'd have Powell and Jay Will. And was Mike Miller on the 03 team, or had he not arrived yet?
Did you just say the Supersonics were they're the Thunder? Did you just say they were the Hornets?
Oh, I'm thinking of the year.
Yeah,
they moved.
I got stuck on
that. Because they moved there for a year because of Katrina. Remember, they went to Oklahoma. That's what I'm.
Yeah.
It's what I'm getting confused.
The Sonics.
You're right. Yeah,
yeah.
The Sonics.
You said it was the Hornets.
They,
it messed me up. Okay.
They were the Supersonics.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you see how the years just roll by, man.
They really do.
And they roll right out of your mind.
They really do. But it's good news. It's good news.
I mean,
was
Jordan with the Wizards in 03?
I think so. Yeah.
Or had he wrapped it up?
He'd have been coming back to, try to get will his team back into the playoffs in this in this format, you know. He could have done it. If Jordan was on this team, it's possible that they could have caught up to the, I don't know, what is it, 5.5? That's tough.
Yeah.
Why are the Wizards going down? There's no point.
Well, they got John Wall back now. You would assume with Bradley Beal, it gives them a chance, right?
You got eight games to you're right.
It was till 03, so you put Mike on that team.
Yeah, so all you have to do is what? Basically, you got to make up a game and a half of ground. Okay, well, you can do that.
With two studs?
Yeah, you can.
Now you're fully healthy, but I'm not sure those two studs, you know, remember what it was like when they were getting along and playing harmoniously.
Yeah, you're right.
It's been a while.
Yep. All right, listen. Good stuff. Thanks to Mark Giordano for joining us on the show today. Mike Wallace is a senior editor, contributor, and analyst for Grind City Media. Read him at grizzlies.com. You can also hear him on broadcast. Hopefully that'll be the case in a month or so from now, and he joins us now. Hey, Mike, what's going on, man? Appreciate the time.
Hey, anytime, guys, and let me first say, first and foremost, you know, peace and justice to the families of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and George Floyd, and a speedy recovery and safety to the near 300 new cases of COVID that we've had in Shelby County over the last 48 hours. So, you know, anything that I do and say is in the prism of that being a priority, first and foremost, and I just wish justice, peace, and safety to everybody out there, and to you guys, too, and your families as well.
Absolutely. Appreciate
that. Appreciate that. Well said, brother.
A lot to get to today, Mike. Good news, right, on the NBA front. But first, before we get into that news, how you holding up, man? It has been quite the, the last 3 months in America, and we know sort of the history of this city. How you holding up, man?
Hey man, it's hard. It's my, you know, my heart is heavy. You know what I'm saying? I'm balancing between being, you know, enraged and encouraged. You know what I'm saying? I'm hurting, but I'm hopeful. But I tell you what, man, like shows like the ones that you guys are putting on every single day help a lot of us get through it and help a lot of us balance what we're feeling by first and foremost listening. You know, I'm a big fan of you guys' show. You know that. And I've said that from day one when you guys got started. And I really thought that, you know, yesterday's show was very, very important, too, to have the course you guys had, you know, even with Trey Clavis and what was going on with that, too. I heard that entire interview. But I'm making it. I just want people to understand that, you know, the only way forward is together, and we have to listen, man. You know, what we're feeling is important. What each other is feeling is important. And, you know, my cousin, you know, his shop, his bar and grill was destroyed in D.C. during the protest on 8th Street, you know, right outside of Lafayette Park out there in, you know, near the White House. So, you know, that's a black-owned business that was destroyed. My grandmother just celebrated her birthday this week. She's, you know, having some health issues in a walker, basically. But she told me the one thing she wanted for her birthday was to go to Lafayette Park and protest peacefully.
Wow.
And that means a lot, man, coming from the history and the family that I have in D.C. and in Memphis and everywhere that I've been. So, yeah, it's been a big time juggle, man. Sorry for rambling.
No, you're not rambling at all. I think these are actually the most important questions. But I got to ask you, Mike, how do we control the anger, particularly when folks are trying to tell us how to control it? The frustration, yeah. Anger, all of those feelings. How do we, because we know we have to, we can't destroy, you know, what we've built, but how do we do that when people are still telling us, hey, you can't do it this way. You shouldn't be feeling this way. It's hard.
I mean, no evolution or revolution ever happened in this country for progress without pain, without people acting out of frustration. There's no such thing as a legal protest. There's no such thing as you know, doing something to this regard without a cost. There's going to be a cost, freedom costs, you know what I mean? Equality costs. And, you know, obviously no one wants, you know, no one wants people to be harmed and killed and all of that out there. But let's go back to why this current issue came back to the forefront is because we're seeing graphic video right in front of our faces in high definition of black men and women getting killed by law enforcement and pseudo law enforcement. And that is a problem. And until we all can see that this is not just a black issue, but a human issue, then it's going to continue to be these kind of incidents. Now, look, is this happening everywhere? No, it's not happening everywhere, but can it happen at any point anywhere in the country? Absolutely. And I think once people realize that, I think a lot of people do. And I'm not going to discount the people who are well-intentioned and well-meaning, but it's time for compassion right now, man. It's not time for making a point. It's time for compassion and actually having a stand and going beyond some of the statements that are out there.
Beautifully said, man.
Yep. All right, so in terms of the NBA, was, you know, listen, I think we've all been – anticipating the return, and it got a little frustrating there because, you know, you're hearing about the plans and the proposals, but here we are today, and they have a firm plan, and I think it's a good plan, 22-team format at Disney World. What do you make of it? Do you like it? And it also does seem fair for the Grizzlies, too, does it not, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I can say this. I haven't seen the entire format. I think there's still a lot of things that need to be ironed out. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of the Board of Governors officially tomorrow. We obviously know that Woj and Shams are ahead of the game in terms of when it comes to this information coming out the way it is. But until we see the finality of it, it's sort of hard because I do have questions. I'm encouraged by the way it's set up. I think from what I see that everybody else is looking at, you know, the Grizzlies are in great shape. And I've said that from day one, no matter how it was going to spin out, was that this was a team that's proven over the course of the season that they are a legitimate playoff, you know, contender in terms of one of those top eight spots. What we're seeing right now still solidifies that. You know, at worst, they would have to be beaten twice if it gets to a play-in type scenario. But there's still some other questions, too. What is the testing going to be like? What are the ramifications if there is a positive test? What happens if it's multiple teams that are still within the four-game threshold for the AFC? So does it become a mini-round-robin play-in with three or four teams trying to fight it out? Some of those things still have to be played out from that standpoint. And is the penalty still going to be there for teams that try to rest players and bring the integrity of the scheduling question? You know what I'm saying? So there's a, you know, and do you still have your same tiebreaker formats and scenarios going into it as well? So there's still some questions that have to be sorted through that I'm looking forward to. But on the surface, from what we've seen reported so far, it does look encouragingly fair to the Grizzlies' plight.
You know those guys make up better than we do. What should we expect from a young team? Probably doesn't know any better or know that it's supposed to. Hey, you're not even supposed to be it at this point. At this point, that's a team that feels like it's earned the right to be there. Just what kind of effort do you expect? I mean, how together can they be, Mike, when they've and I guess it's a question for all teams, not just a young one, but when you've had this much time off, how can you pick right back up where you left off?
I think the younger teams, particularly the Grizzlies are the youngest team in the playoff top 16 right now. They're the youngest team rotation-wise in that mix right now. And I do think that the fact that their guys are still primarily between 20 and 24 years old, physically they can get their bodies back better. The guys that were injured are going to go back into this retraining from a health standpoint in pretty good shape from everything that I've seen and heard. And frankly, mentality. These are guys, I talked to Jaren Jackson Jr., I talked to Ja Morant and Brandon Clark. All of these guys are only a couple of years removed, and you guys know this, you know, being on the summer league circuits and everything, mm-hmm. they were just in this format, you know, playing in the Las Vegas's, playing for the Team USA under 17 teams, playing in this sort of campus
That's
bubble
true.
Facility.
Yeah.
They can get right back into that mm-hmm. and not miss a beat. And I think that sort of gives them a little bit of a mental advantage, and hopefully that can transition to the chemistry on the court.
In terms of, and I know this is kind of difficult, right, to say without knowing the games themselves, but wouldn't you sort of think, like, you know, before the pandemic arrived in the United States and it became what it was, I mean, the Grizzlies had one of the toughest schedules in the NBA and the Pelicans had one of the easiest schedules. I mean, the playing field in theory is much more level now, is it not?
It is. And because, again, when you look at what the Grizzlies were facing, you know, the 17 games were left, and I think 15 of them were against teams that were still fighting, theoretically, for a playoff spot. It doesn't get much tougher than that. And five of those games were against teams that are bunched up with you, two more against the Pelicans, two more against Portland, one more against San Antonio. So this was going to sort of play out for the Grizzlies regardless, you know what I'm saying, in that kind of format. So all of the teams that they were going to be facing on the regular schedule anyway, our majority of those teams are going to be in Orlando. So it's one of those situations where their schedule doesn't necessarily get easier, but it's going to be really, really strategic with how these schedules come out. You can't obviously play it out the next eight games that were naturally on your schedule. So the NBA is going to have to get real crafty with how they schedule these games. And frankly, try to make it in a way where even the teams that don't have anything to gain by playing these eight, sort of like the Lakers in Milwaukee, make sure that they're matched up with common opponents, so that, you know, again, if the Bucks are playing the Lakers, uh-huh. you know, and LeBron sits out and Giannis sits out, okay, it doesn't hurt either one of those teams, and it doesn't impact the teams that are fighting and scratching for those last seeds. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the schedule shakes out. That's what I'm looking forward to most.
Do you expect, Mike, and we've had this question, I'm sure you've gotten it too, you're back with a healthy Jaren, a healthy Winslow, and a healthy Clark, and maybe is the only guy we would assume is Grayson, who I think it had been announced he's out for the season. Is that sort of fully healthy except for Grayson? Is that what you suspect?
Yeah, that's at the most recent information I had. And again, a lot of this, you know, I hadn't really been into the facility and around the guys. But the most recent information I have is that, yes, that is accurate. That's true. Grayson is the one guy I really hadn't been able to catch up with. But the expectation when this ended, when the season stopped, was that, you know, he was going to be out until next season. I don't know if that changes much. But I do know the other three guys are healthy and ready to go. And, you know, it's going to be basically Jonas Valanciunas told me last week that it's going to be basically just like restarting in October from a traditional training camp, because the time off that you've had is similar to what the time off you normally would have had in that situation too. So they're going to be healthy and moving forward, and I know these guys are energetic and ready to go forward with it.
Are you concerned at all about them? We talked about this with Giannotto, right? This idea that, okay, well, let's try to make some sort of home court advantage in a situation that's obviously is neutral naturally, whether that's adding, hey, you know, traditional tip, we'll give it to the team that's got home court for the second, third, fourth quarters, or, you know, going as far as to add a foul. I'm kind of with Giannotto in the sense, Mike, that,
you know, you start getting away from the rules when you're adding fouls, all that. Is there a right way to do that? Are they trying to do too much with that in terms of the home court advantage or trying to make one?
Yeah, you know, I think, and based on what we've seen so far, and like I said, it's just what's reported out there, I do think there's going to be far more information coming out in the next day or so. But it seems like they're going to keep the traditional formats with Eastern and Western Conference. I'm a fan of that. You know what I'm saying? I'm a fan of keeping
right.
as much of your integrity intact with what you were doing, because you're already asking fans and sponsors and everyone else to make this adjustment with it being in a bubble city, so
right.
to speak, like, or a campus city. And I don't think you need to gimmick it up, you know, too much, because you still want this thing to be, you know, as legitimate as possible, you know, and seen in that way as much as you can at this point. So, no, I mean, I think you keep the rules the same. I think what I'm hearing so far and seeing so far seems to be a fair approach. And as long as they don't try to, you know, mix up too much of it, I still think the integrity of what most fans have come to expect will remain intact.
Hey, Mike, man, this is great stuff as always. Glad we are talking basketball again, and thank you for your words.
Appreciate your thoughts,
on
brother.
Everything that's happening in the world, too, man. Thank you.
Hey, likewise, guys. Keep doing what y'all doing, man. I'm a big fan of y'all's, and the city's lucky to have this show, man. I tell you that much for sure.
Likewise.
Mike,
appreciate that,
lucky
Mike,
to
man.
Have you as All well, right. brother.
Absolutely, man. Be safe.
Bye-bye.
Yep, he is Mike Wallace, Grind City Media.
That is not a brother who just talks it and tweets it. We were talking about, you know, that man is out there in mentoring programs and all of that. And so as much as, you know, he says we're you know, good for the city, he's better for it, I'll tell you that right now. Because he's about that action, Mike Wallace is, and he always got that insight for us on the Grizzlies.
Now, it's the Rundown. The biggest stories from Jason and John. Everything y'all need on 92.9 FM ESPN. First story.
What's your favorite Disney song, Jason?
Man, you love putting an old man on the spot asking some Disney questions.
Let me give you one.
I watched a Disney movie last night, Ratatouille.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know why you had to say it like that. Ratatouille, you know.
Ratatouille.
There you go. Not Ratatouille.
I'm adding a syllable.
Yeah.
Right?
I want to. This is.
Ratatouille.
This is Dwayne Johnson. Did you know Dwayne Johnson was part of the Disney universe? Here. This is
what. This show's bombing.
This is what the NBA is saying to you today.
Let's begin. Yes, it's really me. It's
is that Moana?
Yes. Moana,
never
underrated.
Seen never seen it.
I watched it because it had when The Rock in it. You know.
We know.
What can I say except
you're welcome.
I'll give you this. His reign.
There you go. There you go.
Unwillingness to be embarrassed by anything. It's something. It's admirable.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.